This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, and always streaming at rightscast.net.
Hey everyone, I want to pass along an important message before we get into this episode. Today's guest and I recorded this conversation in early December, prior to J.K. Rowling's most recent disappointing statement about members of a marginalized community. Aside from our obvious dismay over these comments themselves, we were increasingly distressed considering we had only just recorded an episode that explores in some depth how critical the portrayals of non-romantic love are to the resonance of the Harry Potter series. To address this, I considered a number of options up to and including pulling this episode in its entirety, but after much introspection and consultation with this episode's guest, I've elected to air the full interview because, at its heart, this episode is about just that. Heart. Love. The love we have for our neighbors, for our family, and for our friends, and that includes our friends in the trans community. Ironically, it seems J.K. Rowling has missed that message despite having written about it time and time again in her fiction, so let's double down on it here for her and for those everywhere who, for whatever reason, remain unwilling to accept that message of love. Let's take that message of love with us into this new year. Let's love each other, let's love ourselves, let's write on. And write well.
What is love? What's love got to do with it? What's the deal with me trying to get these songs stuck in your head for the rest of the day? Well, let me explain. This episode's guest is helping us explore the many shapes love can take in fiction with an emphasis on non-romantic love. And by the time our conversation has wrapped, I'm sure you'll be in a better position than ever to examine non-romantic love in fiction and your own work as well. Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell. And welcome to episode 73 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. This episode's guest will be familiar to regular listeners of the show as he joined us back in episode 58 to talk about growing one's readership locally. I'm talking, of course, about author M.D. New. For those who aren't acquainted with M.D. or his work, he's a queer fiction writer with a love for writing and travel. Living in the heart of Silicon Valley and growing up around technology, he's always been fascinated with what could be. Specifically drawn to science fiction and paranormal television and novels, M.D. New was inspired by the great Gene Roddenberry, George Lucas, Stephen King, Alice Walker, Alfred Hitchcock, the list goes on. The first two installments of his science fiction series, A New World, were also recently selected as winners in the most recent Rainbow Awards. So congratulations to M.D. on those honors, well deserved. All right, without further ado, let's hop into my conversation about non-romantic love with author M.D. New. Stay tuned afterward for updates on what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you, M.D. New, for returning to the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be back.
Yeah, last time you were on the show, we were talking about how to grow one's readership locally, which is very much a marketing and PR-oriented topic. But today we're going to be talking about something a little more craft-centric, and that is this idea that there are many different dimensions to love as portrayed in fiction. And that, of course, has me wondering, what is it exactly that you mean when you talk about these many different dimensions to love?
Well, one of the things is that when it comes to fiction, you know, most people think right away when you say romance, it's like, oh, it's love between a man or a woman, or a woman and a woman, and a man and a man, or any variations thereof. And that's not always the case. You have in all different types of writings, and in my opinion, some of the best writing is where they show love between family, friends, just general characters, love of life, those types of things, where you really explore this idea of romance and love in all these other ways that people tend to forget about. You know, they don't always think of, you know, a family drama or a family, a story about family or a story about friendship or something like that as love and romance, when in fact it is, because those bonds are so strong. They're right there wrapped around it, and there's no other words for it. It is love. It is romance. it is all of that. And people just kind of go, oh yeah, I guess, yeah, sort of, huh? And it's like, yeah, it's kind of an important thing.
It is an important thing. And maybe that's where we take this conversation next. We want to talk about why is it so important to not only have this understanding of the many dimensions to love, but why is it important to be actively thinking about them while we write?
Well, and I think part of it is kind of like what I've already said, is it's a way to explore other types of relationships, and it's another form of storytelling. What you have when you're writing is, as a writer, and even as a reader, you go into a story with certain expectations. You think, like, you know, be it from the cover design or the blurb or something like that, you go, okay, this is going to be a romance novel, right, where you get, like, maybe a fade to black or a little spicy scene here and there or whatever, and it's about romantic love. But you get these other ideas where it's like, you know, hey, let's tell a story about friendship or family or you know, I don't know, witches and wizards, vampires, whatever, where it's like, you know, it's not about the sex or it's not about romantic love. It's about these characters developing a life and a friendship together where everything else is, that's not important, you know, the sex or the love part. It's all about, you know, those feelings and family and connection. And as writers, we get to explore that, and we get to show that in all these different kind of ways. And so as you're writing something, or as you're outlining something, or if you're a pantser, if you're just writing, sometimes that's where the story takes you. You might have the best intentions of having these two characters hooking up, and all of a sudden you get halfway through and it's like, wait a second, no, they don't hook up. They're just really good friends. That's their journey. Their journey is friendship, or their journey is familiar love. Is that right?
Familiar love or familial. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose either one.
Yeah. It's a big word for this hour of the day.
Yeah. Right. I suppose over on the West Coast, a little earlier for you than it is for me here in Wisconsin. But I like a lot of what you say in there for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's this juxtaposition between romantic love, which is, I think, what many writers first think about when they go, oh, I need some sort of love in this story, or I need that romance through line. You have your romantic love, and then you have this non-romantic love. And it's important to have non-romantic love in our stories, because if our manuscripts are going to be examples of art imitating life, well, we as people hopefully have many different dimensions of love in our own lives. You know, you have friends, you have your husband, of course, as well. I have my wife. We have this romantic relationship, but we also have a friendly relationship within that. I have my own friends. Everyone's friends have friends. We have family, etc. So we have this art imitating life, and that's going to help make our stories, I would assume, feel more real. Is that right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think provides some of the best drama in books is not always the romantic love drama, because, you know, depending on the book, you're going to get your happily ever after, right? I mean, you know that it's all going to work out in the end, and they're going to fall in each other's arms and go, oh, I love you. Oh, I love you too. But with family and friends, that's not always the case. You can build up, you know, especially if you're working on a series where, you know, you have these story arcs, and you can play out that family drama or that friendship drama throughout multiple books and have the reader wondering, going, okay, are these guys or girls or people going to, you know, make up? Are they going to be friends again? Are they still going to be friends after this? Or is this the end? Are we reading this story, the subplot about the end of the family dynamic or this friendship or something like that? And that can be, in my opinion, much more powerful, much more gut-wrenching, and much more heartbreaking than an actual romantic love story that may or may not work.
And to elaborate on that even further, there's this idea, I think, that we have this on-again, off-again notion for romantic love. But to some extent, we can get that in non-romantic love as well, because as you've suggested here, family dynamics change, relationship dynamics change between friends. And I'm thinking right now about actually episode 72 of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast, which will have just debuted before this one. And that features Anne Garvin, who is the USA Today bestselling author of books including I Like You Just Fine When You're Not Around. And in that book, the main character does have a love interest that kind of comes and goes throughout, but the real relationship, aside from the relationship between that protagonist and herself, is actually between the protagonist and her sister. And they have this very fraught relationship as it pertains to who is caring for, say, her mother and the results of that and the effect that it has on the sister-sister relationship. So there's already an example of how we can see non-romantic love manifesting in fiction, but I know that you came to this conversation with some examples of that yourself. So what are some examples of these different dimensions to love that you have found in popular fiction?
Well, so as you and I talked a little bit beforehand, there's some of my favorite books that actually, if you really look at them, they aren't necessarily love stories. I mean, they have a little bit of it in the background, but it's not the focus of it. And by the way, just as an aside, I wanted to say that episode was really good. I really enjoyed it because I got that right away. I was like, yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about. See, it doesn't right. have to be about love. But like one of my personal favorite books, My Antonia by Willa Cather Carter was really excellent. And it takes place in the 1800s and the settling of the West. And it was one that I picked up in high school in an English class. It was required reading, which it's just all about kind of what we were just talking about. It's this love story, romance story, but it's not about a romantic love. It's about these characters. So that one's my favorite. Another example that I had was Little Women. Everyone talks about Little Women, and I know it's being remade into yet another movie. And that book by Louisa Alcott, I believe, is all about family love. There's a little bit of romance weaved in, but it's all about Jo's love for her sisters and her family and taking care of them and wanting to take care of them. Another example that's another personal favorite of mine and kind of got me thinking about the whole thing was Interview with the Vampire by Anne Rice. Some people will say that, oh, it's the most tragic love story ever. Or it's, you know, you find out that you have these two lonely, immortal vampires who find each other. And there's subtext there that Anne Rice goes into that, you know, can lead you to think that, yes, they really did have a romantic relationship. But kind of in the end, they just had a dysfunctional family. I mean, they put the fun in dysfunctional. you know, and then the big one that you and I had talked about, of course, was Harry Potter, which has examples of all this kind of familiar love. You've got Harry's love for his friends, the Weasley's love for Harry, Snape's love for Harry, Snape's love for Harry's mother, even though Snape was, in fact, in love with her, but there was never a romantic storyline there. Dumbledore's love for Harry, Hermione and Ron's love for Harry. I mean, so you just got all of these examples of love and friendship that is woven throughout seven books, and you don't know how it's all going to work out. You don't know, you know, how are these relationships going to survive all of this? And some do and some don't. Another example that I just realized was, of course, The Color Purple by Alice Walker is another what I would classify as a non-romance story. You have the characters who just kind of have fallen, you know, who have this love relationship that's never really more than friendship, even though everyone wants it to be more. And then in movies, of course, you know, the really big one right now that everybody's talking about and has been talking about for years, of course, is Frozen.
Yeah.
You have two sisters. It is as far away from a love story, a typical Disney love story, as you can get. I mean, that story is all about two sisters, you know, and their journey and love and finding their way back to each other and supporting one another and being there as a family. So those were some of the examples that I pulled together that I thought, you know, really exemplify kind of that whole idea of romance in a non-romantic story setting.
And I think another dimension that's worth kind of adding to the pile here that only occurred to me actually while you were elaborating specifically on these examples of non-romantic love in the Harry Potter universe has to do with the love that a reader can have for a particular character or for a story as a whole or for a relationship dynamic. And I think that to an earlier point that you were making, there's this idea that the more that our art imitates life, the more there is on offer for readers to fall in love with and to develop feelings for. And those feelings are, I would assume most of the time, not romantic, but people talk about, well, I have this book that I love. I have this series that I love. And I think specifically in the Harry Potter world about characters that I really loved, that, you know, there are so many of them in that series that you didn't even mention them in your list because the list can just go on and on forever. And those characters specifically are folks like Hagrid, and then, of course, Dobby the elf. And I know that when I was younger and reading Harry Potter growing up, I've never cried so hard reading Harry Potter as I did when Dobby died. And Dobby was... he was just an elf, you know, like he was there and he did his job and he was just a wonderful contribution to the team. But of all the different kinds of love that there were in that book, the one that hit me most was this loss of Dobby. And that's just an example, again, of this idea that non-romantic love can exist not only between characters, but it can exist between readers and characters as well.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I was thinking about that, too. I was thinking about Dobby and you know, you just start going through all of those stories and you have so many characters to pick from. And yeah, Dobby just, I mean, it just crushed me when he died. I was just like, I was ready and willing to just put the series down and not read anymore. Of course, I got over it, but I was just like, I can't believe she did that. She killed Dobby. Why? You know, pitchforks was ready and the torches were ready. And I was like, no, this must be a joke. You know, some of those relationships are really the best relationships in the book because we get to explore them throughout not only one book, but throughout the series. And when they are cut short, like in the case of Dobby, you just kind of sit there and just you're gutted because it was like, no, he had done so much and he had worked so hard, and to see that that's how he met his end, it was just like, oh, why?
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers and authors thrive online. If you need to get your writer's platform up and running fast, Dandelion Web Marketing's Author Quick Start packages are the place to start. These Author Quick Start packages take the headache out of creating your author website and blog and can help you with that all-important analytics tracking and more. Become your best you online today with Dandelion Web Marketing and visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. Well, MD, you gave us some really great examples of other folks' fiction and how non-romantic love can manifest itself in those works. But how about your own writing? How have you incorporated non-romantic love into your own work?
So I was thinking about that, and I was trying to make sure that I had some really good examples because I was like going, you know, we're talking about this, and I better be prepared. So a couple of the stories, as I went back and I kind of looked at them, obviously the newest one that I have, Tad, the Angel of Death, is really about friendship and that exploring friendship and love of between friends, not only throughout one story, but throughout the life of the characters. They go, you know, we meet the characters in 2001 and 2001, 2002, and they go all the way up through 2071.
Wow.
And you get to experience their changing relationship, their friendship, their dynamic throughout the entire story. And I really wanted to show that because when I wrote this book, it was written to honor friends of mine who have passed. And, you know, we are impacted greatly by our friends and our family, and this was kind of a tribute to them to so they weren't forgotten, so that, you know, out there in the universe, that it's about, you know, there are aspects of our friendships that were in there that I just really wanted to show, and I wanted to share in the backdrop of this urban fantasy story about an angel of death and a regular human. And just exploring that friendship. Another example is one of my short stories called The Reunion. And it's a ghost story. It's a really short story, but it also is another example of the love of friendship and family versus romantic love. There's no romantic love in that story at all. It's all about friendship and people being together and, you know, reflecting on their lives and how their world was changed and how their friendships had grown and changed as well. And then the other example that I had, of course, is from my sci-fi series Contact, which I'm going to just plug because it is very special to me, was number one best sci-fi book in the Rainbow Awards. That and Conviction, it's a sequel book. And that explores kind of this friendship, or not friendship, but it explores the idea of aliens coming to our world tomorrow and how we react to that. But one of the plot lines is the main human character dealing with the relationship of his family, which was very not in the best situation at the start of the book, and how they kind of patch up their relationship and them finding their new normal, their new family structure, and accepting one another and being there for one another through some very different, challenging times in mankind's history. So, you know, those are kind of the areas where I explored them in my book. Also, The Calling has a little bit of that with the main character and his creator. And The Calling, of course, is the my vampire story, and that they develop a more of a family bond. Vampires are kind of tricky because they have that special mental stuff that vampires do, and so is it romance, is it family? But in the case of Juliet and Duncan, it really became much more of a family love versus anything romantic or sexual.
And I do want to congratulate you on those wins in the Rainbow Awards. I know you found out about that only within the last week since we recorded, I do believe. So congratulations on that. Very well deserved. It was great to see not only your success, but the success of many other 9-Star Press authors. So a little additional plug for you here, because I know that I believe when you actually were on the show last, that was only at about the time the first book in your A New World series was coming out. So it's really cool to see that over the course of, what has it been, 7-8 months, that not only have these books come out, but they've reached quite the audience as well. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. It really, I couldn't be just more pleased and more thrilled with it all. I was absolutely, you know, like we were kind of talking about a little bit, you know, you kind of go through that imposter syndrome of like, wait, really? Are you sure? Do you want to reconsider that? I mean, really? I mean, come on now. There were a bunch of other books out there, but yeah, it was pretty exciting. And I'm still kind of in that whole like disbelief accepting kind of phase. And I just can't be more pleased, because the sci-fi series really means a lot to me, because that was the one that I've been working on for quite a long time, especially with research. And it was just like, wow, you know, people really dug it and got into it and enjoyed it. So and not just the first book, but also the second book. So it's like, wow, God, that's awesome. That's great. Yay.
And I'm sure one of the reasons that people found these books so engaging is because of some of these additional dynamics that you added in the form of non-romantic love. And I am wondering, maybe this ties in a little bit to something we were discussing earlier in this conversation, what is it that made you choose to include these non-romantic relationships, not only in your A New World series, but also, as you mentioned, in Tad, for example?
Well, I don't really classify myself as a romance writer, like writing romantic love stories and stuff like that. I can do it, but I think that there are people who can do it so much better and with so much more flair. Personally, that was just never where I really wanted to go with my writing. But when I was thinking about telling these stories, it was like I really wanted to show, you know, love and friendship and explore those things, because honestly, it to me is just so much more interesting in a story, and you get so much more wiggle room. You can have families just absolutely hate each other, and at some point, you know, you don't know, and the reader doesn't know, is this going to last? Are they going to make up, or, you know, are we going to read a story about, you know, how they live their separate lives, always regretting the fact that they never made up, or the same with friendships and stuff like that. It's, you get so much more to play with. And people don't have that expectation of a happily ever after, that it's all going to work out, especially when you're talking about families and friendships and those types of things. And so when I was crafting these stories, I really wanted to tell that aspect of it. You know, I threw in a little bit of romance here and there because I'm sappy and I do like a little bit of a love story. But I never wanted that to be a focus. It was never important to me that that was the main draw of the book. You know, because that to me was never the most interesting part. Because it also always feels like you're kind of restricted. If the character, you know, if you write a romance story or erotica story or something like that, and the characters don't have a happily ever after or happy for now ending, you're going to get crucified. And, you know, some people will understand, but some people won't, because that's what they expect going in. And so if you tell these other types of stories or these other dimensions of, you know, romantic love or love and family and everything like that, you kind of get to put all those expectations aside and just go with where the story goes. And so that's where I really wanted to focus my stories. And I think I did that with all of my stories. I think, you know, I would like to think that I did that, you know, with everything, and that, you know, you kind of get to experience more of the ups and downs of people's life journeys outside of the romance, because relationships can come and go. But you know, your family, you're kind of stuck with, and even some of your friends, you know, you've known them as long as you've known some of your family, and they're kind of there for the long haul one way or another too.
And it seems like you were very deliberate in how you chose to approach the incorporation of non-romantic relationships and depictions in your work. But I'm sure that even being as deliberate as you were, that you encountered some challenges along the way. And if you did, how is it that you used your revisions process to address these challenges? And what might other writers learn from that process?
Well, I think one of the areas – there were two books that I ran into this, I think, the most. One was, of course, Tad, where I did have these characters that I was – you know, we're following them throughout their entire life, right? So it was like, okay, look, am I going to have them get together? Are they not going to get together? And at one point, I was like, okay, I'm going to play with them and have them get together. And then it just didn't feel organic and real. You know, it was just like, no, they're too different. You know, you're kind of like forcing a square peg in a round hole. It didn't work. And so I cut all that back. But what I did end up doing at some point was I mentioned a couple of times where they had tried, you know, to have this relationship. And it's not really too spoilery in the story, because it's just this little small element of it. But, you know, they just found out that they were better off as friends, and their lives worked better with them being friends. So as I was revising stuff, kind of a lot of that romantic stuff came out and between the two of them. And then I got to play with it a lot more, because then I got to have other things happen to these characters where I wasn't focusing on, you know, this romance and showing it throughout the years and how it changes. It was like, wow, because they're friends, now they can have all these other adventures types of things. And it just worked out so much better. And the same with the calling. I had, you know, moments where it was like, okay, I knew where the story was going to go. I know how it's going to wrap up. But you're sitting there and it's like, okay, am I forcing this insta-love, right, upon these characters? And I was just like, I can't do that. It's got to be more organic. You know, I mean, yes, there's love at first sight, and I do believe that that happens, but it happens way too much in books, I think. You know, you get these characters who see each other across a crowded room, and everything fades away, and the stars align, and it's like, okay, really, come on, barf. When does that really happen in reality? you know, so I had to take those aspects out of, especially the calling, and the romantic interest for one of the characters doesn't appear until well over halfway through the book, where I was trying to shoehorn that person in earlier, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So all that came out. It was like just trimming those hedges. It was like, nope, this is gone. Nope, that's gone. Nope, this is gone. And again, it just freed up the work to do everything else, because then I could focus on these other aspects of the stories that were taking a backseat to this the romance angle, right? And so it was just like, oh God, that's so much better. So I think that, you know, we need to use our revisions to really go back and look at the story. The first draft is I think somebody said it, and they might have actually said it on your show. The first draft of the story is just you telling the story to yourself. You write the story and you're telling the story to you. Then you use your revisions to go back and fine tune that and recraft it. And you take that time to really find out what plot elements are working, what plot elements aren't working. And all of a sudden, then you can kind of start to nuance it and say, okay, well, I know the end point is this, so I don't have to cram it in right here. I can fit it in here later where it fits much more organically. And I think that that's something that we as writers all have to do, and, you know, use that revision process time to really address those issues.
And like you say, keeping in mind that as you draft, even before we get to the revisions process, that we might feel called initially to incorporate a romantic relationship that maybe we didn't see coming. I know that that actually happened to me when I was writing Accounting for It All. I had the intention of having a romantic relationship in the present timeline, but not necessarily in the past. But as I was writing some of the parallel timeline that takes place in the past, I did stumble my way into incorporating a romantic relationship that I didn't think would be there. And it kind of budded from what was originally a friendship. So maybe just being deliberate, again, that seems to be the key word here, is being deliberate about when it is we're going to incorporate these relationships, whether they're going to be romantic or non-romantic is another thing it's worth putting some consideration into. And like you say very well, write the story for yourself the first time around, see where everything kind of falls together, and then use that revisions process to be judicious about what it is we want to incorporate and what it is that we want to emphasize. So a lot of really good takeaways from you there. I appreciate that a great deal. Why don't we conclude here by you sharing, if you would, where is it that listeners to this show can find you and your work online?
So I have a blog at www.mdnew.com, where I do a weekly blog just on updates and random stuff. I'll highlight authors, other genres, really kind of that's kind of my catch-all, where I just talk about random stuff that I find interesting. And I really do like to take and use my blog to really bring out other authors from across the spectrum, not just LGBTQ authors, but authors of all kinds, and have them over and let them talk about their works, their stories, their what's new and exciting with them. I find that that's a really good way to just kind of help keep things fresh and keep people learning. I'm also on Twitter. I am on Facebook. I have a fan page as well as my personal account. Instagram I have a little bit more fun with. I share a little bit more of my personal stuff, so people will see pictures of me and my husband doing stuff occasionally, or I'll post some pictures of him that I just think are adorable that he would much rather have me not post and will threaten to kill me. Okay. But and Twitter, I just take the opportunity to share stuff here and there, and you look up MD New and they pretty much will all appear. It's either writer MD New or author MD New, and New is spelled N-E-U, not N-E-W. So N-E-U is how it's spelled. Yeah. So that's where they can find me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And thank you so much, MD New, for joining me here on the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
And so concludes my conversation with author MD New. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could leave the WritesCast Network a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the WritesCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who've already left us a 5-star rating and review, thank you. And thank you again to MD New for joining me for this episode. I, of course, owe additional thanks to the WritesCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/WritesCast. In exchange for their support, WritesCast Network patrons get access to great patron perks, including WritesCast swag, discounts on my editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques from yours truly. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen today in supporting our programming at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. So become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. Coming up next on the Rightscast Network is an episode featuring author Tracy S. Phillips, who'll join me to talk about securing traditional publishing contracts non-traditionally. Her episode will debut on Apple Podcasts, rightscast.net, and wherever you listen to podcasts on January 17th. If you're wondering where this month's Novel Approaches episode is, never fear. In the month of January, Novel Approaches will debut on the third Friday of the month as opposed to the second. My guest co-host, Maggie Derrick, and I wanted to make sure our Rightscast chat for that episode wasn't competing with the holidays, so we backed up the debut date for this particular episode. Novel Approaches will return to the second Friday of each month, beginning in February. Until those episodes debut, you can stay in touch with us by visiting rightscast.net or by saying hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rightscast, or by searching for the Rightscast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com, and you can now call us at area code 608-284-8342 and leave us a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in future programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com or holler at me on Twitter as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, and always streaming at rightscast.net.